from St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. For nearly 6 years, State Representative Crystal Quaid has served as the leader of Missouri's House Democratic Caucus. And it's not an easy job. Republicans have had a tight grip on the Missouri House and Senate since the 2000s, and Democrats typically are shut out of most policy debates. But Quaid's caucus has arguably punched above its weight, especially with influencing the budget. And she's hoping that a backlash against total GOP rule in Missouri will usher her in to the governor's mansion. Joining us now is House Minority Leader Crystal Quaid, a Democrat from Springfield, who is one of two main contenders for the Democratic gubernatorial nomination. The other is Springfield businessman Mike Hamra. Crystal Quaid, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much for having me.
When you were first elected in 2016, Missouri Democrats suffered catastrophic losses for statewide and legislative posts and only recently started to gain ground in the House. But Republicans still dominate all parts of state government. Do you think that Missourians are ready for Democrats like you to reclaim the governor's office when the party tends to be arguably more liberal than the average Missouri voter?
Absolutely. Missourians are ready. You know, what I have found in my time, not only representing Southwest Missouri in the legislature, but traveling the state, is folks are frustrated. They're frustrated by a leadership vacuum that is happening in Jefferson City. And one of the things I was able to prove in 2016 by becoming the only elected Democrat in the southern half of the state in an arguably red at the time area was because I listened to folks and I asked what they wanted. And we found common ground, even if we disagreed on some really big issues. We were open and honest with each other. And I've continued to win because of that. And I think that we can take that statewide.
And that gets to our first listener question. Jamie C. on Instagram writes the following. How will you get rural Dems excited enough to turn out despite the gerrymandering that suppresses their vote? What messaging do you have that can unite urban, suburban, and city voters? Now, this is the $6 million question for Missouri Democrats. As mathematically, they can't win elections if they get 20% in rural counties and, you know, just cede places like Jefferson or Clay or Platte counties on the western side of the state. Mm-hmm. What would be your response to James C. on Instagram?
You know, the first part of that is simply showing up. For so long in our state, Democrats were not running in places like Joplin, Missouri, or communities where we knew it was impossible to win that seat, right? And so the work that we've been doing over the past several years is making sure that Democrats are present. And while we may not win in a specific race, if we move the needle 2 or 3 points, and we do that year after year, that is how we eventually flip those legislative seats. And when we talk about statewide races, those 2 or 3 points in those legislative districts really matter. And part of showing up is not just being present, but also talking about those issues, to your point, that matter to folks. You know, regardless of where you live in the state of Missouri, access to hospitals that are affordable and won't make you go bankrupt is an issue that matters to folks. Public education that is, you know, accessible and good for our kids is important to folks. And so when to answer that question, showing up in rural Missouri is step one. And step two, of course, is listening and talking about the issues that matter to people. To your point, it is the winning answer of, you know, if we can figure out how to excite the cities, but then also get rural folks to turn out, like, then Democrats can win. And absolutely, I think we can do both of those things at the same time.
If you were to win, you will likely have a Republican General Assembly, perhaps for your entire 4 or 8 years in office. Governor Jay Nixon struggled to pass much of his agenda when he had a similar setup. Why do you think the legislature, which you have contended on multiple times, is more extreme than it has been in the past, mm-hmm. would work with you on any of the issues that we're planning on discussing today?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I often say to folks is the extremes are continuing to divide us, but there is still a lot that we have common in common with each other. And I say that in, you know, Governor Parson's priorities this year were things that the Democrats and myself have been championing for years, like childcare access, higher teacher wages, those types of things. And so when I look at this as a Democratic governor with a Republican legislature, the first thing I'll say is my track record in Jefferson City definitely speaks for itself in finding common places where we can work together. I've had several pieces of my legislation passed, just didn't happen to have my name on it because I have built relationships with folks on the other side. side. And I would take those relationships that I've built into the governor's office and make sure that we, when we're talking about investments in Missouri, that those are things that we know citizens want and that representatives can get behind. You know, we're not going to agree on everything, and there will be a lot of things we disagree on. And that veto power is definitely important in that kind of situation. But I also do believe that there is a lot that we can do together.
We got this question from Just a Thought From Me from Reddit. If you are presented with an issue that you may disagree with personally or politically, but the people of Missouri vote that they are for it, will you support that issue? And I think that Just a Thought From Me is referring to if something passes via an initiative petition that may be conservative leaning or against some of your values, would you say, as you have in the past, that I'm going to uphold the will of the people?
Absolutely. You know, and again, I can point to my work as a legislator coming from Greene County. There have been a few issues that I have voted against my own caucus, even as floor leader. Some, if folks deeply pay attention and are nerdy and watch the screening of what we're doing in there, sometimes you'll see that I am often the very last Democrat to vote. And I do that sometimes when I need to vote differently than what the other Democrats in the House need to do, because my district is a 50-50 district. And I believe I've done well in that regard. Obviously,
it was. It seems pretty Democratic leaning
it
now,
is,
but continue.
But we did give a few points away in redistricting. But yes, you know, so I think that's deeply important. And so to answer the question, yes, you know, my job as an elected leader is, of course, to do what I think is right. But it's just more important to listen to what folks want me to do. And so, yes, I will uphold the votes.
Now, here's a curveball example from Eric S., who asked this question on Threads. On the Politically Speaking podcast, State Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman said the legislature will most likely try to overturn an abortion amendment. If an abortion amendment is passed, will these candidates respect the will of the people? Or is an initiative petition the only way for Missouri voices to be heard? Now, just to be clear, Senator Coleman was talking about putting another ballot initiative on the statewide ballot if the abortion amendment that we're going to talk about next ends up passing. So I guess by that same token, if voters end up changing their minds and repealing the abortion amendment, would that be something that you could just respect, even though that's an issue that you have been very public about supporting abortion rights?
You know, the first thing that I will say, and any whatever happens with this initiative, we can expect that there's going to be lawsuits from both sides of this conversation. But to answer that question, yes, I will respect the vote of people. That doesn't mean that there aren't ways that we can make things more accessible, particularly around the abortion. We may get into this more. You know, there are so many laws on the books that talk about waiting periods and size of the hallways and all sorts of things. And there are places that, as governor, we can work within that space while still respecting the fact that folks wanted to continue to keep it in there. I will tell you that I don't believe that it's going to go down. I think overwhelmingly this is going to pass, and we can look at the 380,000 signatures in record number of time to do so. But it's a difficult place for folks to be in, but that's where I think it's deeply important as a candidate that folks know where my values are and the things that are deeply important to me as an individual as well.
Well, why are you confident that, and we got to make clear, it's likely that there will be an amendment legalizing abortion up to fetal viability on the November ballot, but Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft has not confirmed that yet. But if it is, why are you so confident that it's going to pass, given, as people like Senator Igloff said, Missourians have voted for lawmakers and executive leaders who are openly opposed to abortion rights and have championed the ban on most abortions that passed in 2019?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I'll say is I guarantee you when Senator Igloff was knocking doors, he wasn't saying this is the only issue that I'm going to work on. And that's the difference between a ballot initiative and electing politicians, right? So when we are asking that one specific question on do you think government should be in your business in the doctor's office or not, overwhelmingly, people say no. And, you know, of course, we've all seen data and polling, but I can tell you anecdotal stories where self-identified Republicans will tell me that this is too far. This government overreach without exceptions for rape or incest is too much, and I don't want government telling me what to do. That's not a partisan issue, and I really do believe that we're going to see a very interesting combination of voters who are supportive.
Well, if Republicans come on this show and I ask the same question to them, they're going to tell me that this initiative is much more radical and far-reaching than Missourians will accept, and that a lot of voters have moral objections to abortion. I'm sure some of the people that you've knocked on doors have had moral objections too. Why do you think that those voters are going to suddenly decide that they want to not only end the abortion ban, but potentially get rid of a lot of other abortion restrictions based off the language of that amendment?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I'll say is, of course, there are some voters that aren't going to move on this issue at all, that are in the Igel camp. And, you know, I don't think anything that we say to him is going to change his mind. But again, you know, I really think that for a lot of Missourians, this comes down to an attack on personal liberties and freedoms and government telling people what to do. And nobody likes that. Democrat or Republican, libertarian is frustrated by that. And to the point of this being too extreme, what this is doing is trusting doctors and people, adults, to make this decision. And I don't think that the government should be getting in the way, and I think most voters are going to be with us on that.
We are talking with House Minority Leader Crystal Quaid. She is a Democrat seeking to be Missouri's next governor. So we asked Lieutenant Governor Kehoe about potential state incentives for the Chiefs, the Royals, and the Cardinals. Would you support state aid to help refurbish or build entirely new stadiums for those teams?
I think what's really important about this discussion is the fact that Missouri doesn't seem to be at the table right now, when we know Kansas is, I believe, going next week to a special session to try to take the Chiefs and potentially the Royals away from us. And so I think as governor in this state, we absolutely need to be open to discussions that are supportive for the community as a whole. We know the economic impact. We know the jobs it can create. We know the small business owners who own restaurants who you know, thrive because of the stadiums and the teams being there. But we also don't want the benefits to, you know, billionaires to be on the backs of taxpayers, regular Missourians. But that doesn't mean we should be ignoring this problem. If the Chiefs leave, that's a huge hole in Missouri and also in Missouri spirits. I mean, we could talk about economics all day, but people really love having a winning team in their state. And so the fact that we are not at the table for this discussion is really disappointing.
You've put forward a measure to end taxes on groceries. Now, before we proceed, would this apply just to the state tax, or would this bar municipalities from also taxing groceries?
Yes. So getting in the weeds for a moment, that was obviously a big back and forth on this bill. And there are so many different options presented in the legislature around getting rid of food taxes. What I proposed was actually getting rid of taxes both at the local level and the state level. However, because we know our cities are very dependent on that money, what my bill offered was creating a mechanism within the legislature to open up a fund, and then we could, through appropriations, put that money in there. You know as well as I do, we're sitting on quite a surplus right now, and that's an example, obviously, that won't always be there, but where that funding could go in to make them whole. I absolutely would not want to move forward unless we knew that the municipalities were going to be able to continue to function and come up with alternative ways of funding. But we all know that folks are hurting right now, and food is one of those places where, regardless of where you are or who you are, is going to be impacting you.
Well, House Democrats like yourself have often criticized Republicans for cutting taxes and being short-sighted and putting the state's financial future at risk. And I think that you have proposed a certain time of taxing yachts or foreign-owned farmland. Mm-hmm. But do you think that that's actually going to be enough to recoup the losses from a grocery tax? Like, I don't know how many yachts are purchased in Missouri, but it doesn't seem like there's enough to, like, recoup potentially hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, and not just yachts. I mean, the list could go on, right? Boats. And there are a lot of things that planes, you know, like private planes are also not taxed in the state of Missouri. The point of that legislation, of course, knowing that it was not going to become law, is having a discussion around the fact that, look, everyday Missourians are struggling with basic needs to get by right now. And we have so many tax cuts in Missouri for the uber wealthy. And in my time in Jefferson City, they have continued to pass more of them. And I know that Missourians everywhere know that is unfair. And they're looking for leaders who are willing to look outside the box to give them a break while we are not letting the ultra rich skate by.
Speaking of foreign ownership of farmland, Democrats have been very critical of the 2013 decision by the legislature to remove the ban on the foreign ownership of farmland. I say the legislature because Governor Nixon vetoed that and it was overridden.
Right.
But that was done to make sure that Smithfield, which has a large footprint in Missouri and was bought by a Hong Kong-based company, was able to continue operating. So how do you balance the philosophical aversion to countries like China owning land in Missouri while not like ruining the economic fortunes of rural Missouri.
Yeah, I think it is a hard balance. And I think it's a very valid discussion, but one that absolutely needs to be had. And the reason that I had been engaging in this discussion, but didn't start filing the bill until after COVID happened, when we saw in so many of our small communities, there were empty grocery store shelves everywhere. When down the street, they were raising cattle and, you know, but then they weren't able to eat it there locally. And that's a huge problem, right? And so when I have this discussion, you know, we know that there is a footprint already. What I really want to see is not expanding that footprint and making sure that we are protecting the farmers.
So you wouldn't like confiscate the land like Arkansas is doing, for example.
And I'm not even sure, and I haven't looked at Arkansas, but I'm not even sure how we could go about doing that in a way that is really legal and makes sense. What I want us to be looking at here is what can we be doing to help our local farmers keep food accessible and affordable, because that's part of this conversation too, and making sure that it's that trust exists for Missourians. Because I know when there is a crisis, if there's a shortage, folks want American, you know, right down the street made food if they can. And it's people are very frustrated and nervous about this conversation. And it's one that, you know, I can't tell you how many doors I've knocked or folks I've talked to throughout Missouri that are really nervous about this. And they want us to be talking about it.
Well, let's talk about crime. What would you do as governor to help both urban and rural communities that need assistance in preventing and responding to crime?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing that I would like to talk about is investment in this space. And when I say investment, it is a huge gamut from making sure that our law enforcement officers are adequately funded and trained, and there's money behind that, but also money around, you know, mental health care and addiction and things that we know increase crime. And, you know, after school programming, the list goes on and on. And another piece that you may want to jump into, as I'm sure we've had this conversation before, but is also looking at ways that local municipalities can have power over, you know, what happens in their communities. And by that, I mean, you know, I've had so many conversations with law enforcement officers saying the fact that children can run around cities with guns is a problem. And the fact that when they pull these teenagers over and they confiscate a weapon, they just turn around and give it right back to them. And I have been asked so many times by law enforcement to help in that situation. And I know mayors, the mayor of Springfield, Columbia, St. Louis, and Kansas City all came together asking for help in the crime space, being allowed to, at least in their communities, dictate what those laws look like. And as somebody who grew up in rural Missouri, you know, I grew up with loaded guns on my wall, and we needed them to kill rattlesnakes and whatever, copperheads, whenever they were coming in our yard. And that's a different life than a kiddo here in St. Louis City. And so I think that should be on the table for discussion as well.
So I've heard that proposal before, and I know why Democrats in particular are pushing for it, because a lot of them represent areas with high crime rates and they see the regulating guns as one of the solutions. But how do you propose that type of like idea without it being like inherently discriminatory? Like the idea that I wouldn't be able to own some types of guns because I live in St. Louis City, but I could own really large guns in St. Charles or Richmond Heights, which is just across the border. Like there's all sorts of like fairness questions. There's racial equity questions behind that, because urban areas tend to have more African Americans than rural areas. Like I know that's a large question, but I'd like you to address that.
Well, I think it's a valid point of discussion here. What I come back to is when I sit down with law enforcement officers, and I know that there's a whole gamut that we could get into with the trust and funding and all the things around that. But when I, you know, particularly in my community, which, you know, Springfield's crime rates are very, very high, and we're not often the ones talked about. And I ask them, what do you need from us to make your jobs better? The first thing that they say is they need help in that space. And I think the number one to piggyback on that is they talk about juveniles. And when we look at our crime and the impact that that has in our economy, impact on the lives of these individuals, particularly young people that get wrapped up into this, if we have mechanisms in place to be able to stop that while they're teenagers instead of letting that continue, I think that is a discussion worth having. I'm a gun owner myself. I absolutely respect that conversation, and I don't want to come across that I'm thinking the government should come in and put all these parameters in place. But I do think we need to respect the fact that Missouri is a very diverse place when it comes to the types of lives that we have. We have farmers who need things for livestock to protect their own family's, you know, economic growth. And then we have, you know, but that is a very different lifestyle than, again, a kid walking down the street in an inner city. And I think that we need to be open and honest with law enforcement officers and have those conversations about what they need. And, you know, I'm not saying that is the solution by any means, but this all or nothing conversation obviously is not working.
All three Republican candidates for governor have expressed support for having the state control of the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. What do you think of that idea? And what do you make of the contention that, quote unquote, local control, which means the St. Louis mayor's office oversees the department, has not worked for the city of St. Louis?
I often joke, Jason, that I never realized I would have to fight for local control so much as a Democrat in Missouri when I got to Jefferson City. But this falls in that bucket, too. I mean, people in their local communities know so much more about what's happening locally and what's good for them than the folks in Jefferson City or Washington, for that matter. And I say the same about our police departments. But the one thing that I would add to that is we know Kansas City has been under state control for quite some time, and their crime rates are rising. So it's not working there. And while I know it's easy to just say this is the solution, let's do this instead, when the data doesn't back it up, then again, we need to have more honest conversations about possible solutions here. And it's not working in Kansas City. And I trust the people in their communities to elect people that they want to make decisions.
And a quick yes or no answer. Would you want to end state control for the Kansas City Police Department then?
Yes.
Representative Crystal Quaid is one of two major Democratic candidates for governor. We're currently working with her opponent, Springfield businessman Mike Hamra, to appear on a future episode of this show. Leader Quaid, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.